So my belief is that motherhood is a leadership position. I think sometimes in the workforce, people think of motherhood or parenthood in general as a liability, but more so for moms, they think of it as, oh, you're going to need time off. You're going to have to get your kids, but they think about all these other inconveniences somehow that is created by motherhood. And I kind of challenge that thought process.
Hey, and welcome to the Parenting on Purpose podcast, your podcast to mirror your self-development journey with your parenting journey, because it is amazing what can be accomplished with a little bit of purpose. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Parenting on Purpose.
All right, parents, welcome back to Parenting on Purpose. We are so excited. I have Miss Doris Jackson Shazier with me today. Doris, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am doing so well. Thank you for having me.
I'm really, really looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun show. We were just chit-chatting before. I love your focus. This is going to be so fun. So Doris is a leadership coach and executive consultant, and really parallels being a mom and a parent and how those attributes can help you succeed in the leadership and business world. So this is going to be a really fun episode. So super excited to have you, girl. Welcome to the show. Can you please start us off by telling us one thing that you do every day in your life, Miss Doris, to show up on purpose?
Ooh, one thing I do every day. So I am very, very good, or I've gotten very, very good at working on my presence. I was one of those people that I was always either planning the future, meaning thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow, the day, you know, after. I've learned how to put those on a checklist, add those things to my calendar. And every day I spend moments to focus on today.
Nice.
What do I want to achieve today? Who do I want to impact today? Who day do I want to make better? And so these are kind of questions that I start my day out with, like, okay, what's going to be my impact today? And who day do I want to make better? And so that applies to my children. That applies to some of the contractors and people I work with. But I intentionally try and make an impact each day.
On someone's life.
Yep.
That's awesome. I love that. Very cool. It reminds me, I used to have this practice of like once a week, I was going to call somebody that I haven't talked to in at least a year and make it a point to like reach out to them once a week. And one, I would do it twice a week. One would be family and one would be friends. And it was just so cool, the conversations and the rekindling of friendships that you would, you know, you would have from that. So what a cool practice. I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a cool practice too. That's a good one to adopt. I like that.
This is why I always start the show with this question, because we have a lot of really kick-ass people on the show. And if I can learn like one cool thing from them on how to be purposeful in my life and, you know, intentional, you can bring that into self-development, a professional world, parenting, you know, self-growth. It all correlates. So this is awesome. You got me so excited with the whole parallels between being a parent and being excelling in the professional world. So why don't you give us a little backstory of like how you got to this place, what you were noticing, and then I would love for you to share a little bit of what you were telling me before with how these things kind of parallel each other.
Awesome. Yeah. So really these are revelations or hindsight thoughts. So I won't pretend that I always understood this or I always quite got it. It's when I sat back and reflect and really looked at what's my secret sauce? What are some of the things that I have done well or that have contributed to my success? And I found that they kind of were the same things, whether I was at work or home. It was my ability to really navigate or exercise these very specific skills that really help create success. So the way I framed it is I help others to create high accountability, high morale environments in work or at home. So my belief is that motherhood is a leadership position. I think sometimes in the workforce, people think of motherhood or parenthood in general as a liability, but more so for moms, they think of it as, oh, you're going to need time off. You're going to have to get your kids, but they think about all these other inconveniences somehow that is created by motherhood. And I kind of challenged that thought process because I became a mom at 19 years old. I like to tell others that my first leadership position was being a mom. And I learned a lot about how to manage people, how to manage myself, how to manage time, how to manage a budget, like all these different things I learned first as a mom. And then I was able to take those skills and transfer them into the workforce. I've had the pleasure of working as at a management level, a district manager level, a regional VP level, and a senior director level for a major company. I've managed teams from 5 to 10,000 people. And literally, I've used the same skills that I use in my home in order to be successful in those environments. And so I just like to share with people that you don't have to do a lot of extra work if you can tap into the skills, the God-given skills that you've already have. Wow. And apply them in the right situations.
See, I knew this was going to be a hard-hitting podcast. And you hit it on the head. Like, it is looked at as a liability. And sometimes we show up that way. And if you're showing up that way, what's that Emmett Smith quote? Like, if you look good, you play good. If you play good, they pay good. You know, yeah. It's like, yeah, like, if you're showing up with that mentality, like, what are you attracting into your life? Exactly. Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so there's a lot I want to poke around with this. This is a big one. Let's start with, why do you think that is, girl? Why do people look at parenting as a liability? And then what is the big shift that has to happen in the mentality for them to now be on your side of it and focus it as, hey, these are actually something I'm already doing. Now I can get even better here because I've already done it here.
Yeah, well, because I think about from a company perspective, the company is always thinking about operational costs and is thinking about efficiencies, right? And so when you have someone who is a parent, what it does for them is it becomes a complete competing priority. When you're a parent, now you have something that may mean more to this person than this job. And so that's what I think most of the conflict comes in, is that they're trying to manage competing priorities instead of allowing that priority to be the motivating factor for that employee. So it's a big difference in me looking at you being a parent as a liability versus me coaching and developing you, because I know that your why is super important. You show up here because you have that little one to take care of. Now, how do I leverage that in a positive manner to inspire you versus feel like I'm competing with your child? And I think that's where the conflict comes in. And that's the mental adjustment that leaders have to make as it relates to parents.
Wow, that is awesome. And you were, I know you're kind of been in like the larger company space, and you're obviously a consultant for several size companies. But do you find that across the board? Like, I work for a Fortune 500 company, so like, it, you know, definitely has a bigger mentality. But do you find like cap size on companies, they all kind of have that same thought process?
Well, I think some companies are, in any situation, like they're more evolved than others.
Exactly.
So there are some people that get it, or they understand that you can't pour from an empty cup. So how do we fill your cup so that you can pour into others? I like to tell my clients, your client or your guest or your customer experience will never exceed your employee experience. People can't give what they don't have. So if you want excellent customer service, if you want excellent clientele, then the first place you need to look is how you treat your employees so that they can deliver to other people what they're getting. Yeah. And so I think, again, that's part of the shift that has to happen. I think there are companies out there that understand that the better I take care of this employee, I get it all on the back end. And then you have some employees that they forget that they just want the end game and forget that you have to go through your employee to get there. So some people get it, but there are too many companies out there that still don't.
Right. And it's like the companies get it, or they have good people that get it, right? Because it takes a good leader to make a huge, like a leader like yourself, to make a huge impact on a company. So you made some really cool parallels that I just want to play with. Like, one was, you can't give what you don't have. Like, if that's not a parallel to parenting, and you know, your customer experience will never exceed that of your
employee
experience. Your child's experience of your family culture can never exceed that of what you give yourself as a parent. You have to start here.
That's exactly where it goes. That's exactly how you translate that right into the home. Exactly how you translate right to home. And so many people, you know, there's always this debate of who comes first, the spouse or their child, and those type of things. And I kind of take on that same mindset in terms of my child experience won't exceed the experience that me and my husband create. And so if we're having a good experience, they're taken care of. So we take care of us so that we can take care of them. It's not a conflicting priority for us. We come first. It's put on your oxygen mask before you put on somebody else's.
Yeah.
If we pass out, we can't put on their mask.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. We all die. We all go down.
Yeah, we all go down. So I, you know, I see, you know, people have that debate and I'm just like, I can't relate. I don't understand what's the debate there. The child experience is not going to exceed.
Yeah.
The parents experience.
I love that. You also asked me before we were started recording, like, what's your why? And I can see now as you brought that parallel into a company, right? Like understanding the why of the employee really helps to fuel. And I've been in a leadership role as well before where I was also a district manager and I was like right out of college. I was managing all these people that were way older than me. Yeah. And I'm like reading the leadership book, like find out what their why, you know, but yours was very authentic and I'm trying to like implement this. But I remember my answer to you was like, when I needed advice, I was looking at people very like patriarchal that were like now grandparents and they're giving advice on how to parent. And I'm like, that's awesome, Miha, but you're 75 years old. Like that does not pertain to me. I want someone who's in it. And I love what you just said, because companies are evolving just like we are evolving as parents. We don't want to parent the same way we were parented because we see how dysregulated that left us. And to your point, how we weren't putting ourselves first so nobody could progress, and companies are doing the same thing. So, and I think you see that in a lot of different places in our society, but it's really cool. It's like kind of, you know, maybe slower trudge than we'd like, but we are getting there, you know, little by little.
Companies move a little bit slower. It's like moving a cruise liner versus like a rowboat. Like it takes them longer to kind of turn.
Sure.
But you can see that evolution happening in some of the brands. Yeah. So, and in my book, Raising Justice, that's really what I talk about. I talk about the journey or the conflict or just the thought process that comes along with trying to parent in a way that you weren't parented.
Love this.
And how do you suspend judgment? How do you become more of an active listener? How do you allow a child to communicate in a way that you weren't allowed to when you were younger? Like we all have those stories of if I did that, my mom would have, you know, kind of thing. And so in that book, I really take people on the journey of me trying to parent in a way that I wasn't parented. And what it feels like to kind of give what you didn't get.
So we'll start here. I wanted to, I'm excited that you brought up the book because I wanted to ask about it in context of, you mentioned parenting and being a mother of a daughter and raising your daughters to be leaders and your, you know, your children. So we'll get to that in a second, but let's start with what you just brought up, which is how do you parent in a way when you weren't parented? Like you don't have relevant evidence. So how do you do that? So tell me, what were the triggers for you that made you realize like this needs to change? And then how did you go about that exploration and what did you find out?
Well, I think it started with, we all have the things that we wish we would have had, right? So I think it starts from inside of when I'm a mom, I'm not going to do that to my child. And then you quickly find out how it happens, right? Like, you're like, oh man, I thought I would have never did that. And then you see, oh, that's why she was so upset when I ran out that way, that fear. And you get those emotions. So I think in motherhood, you really do understand your parents a lot better. Like you get some understanding. Yeah. But then also you're on this journey to kind of give the child the things that you wanted to have. Yeah. So I think it began there, is wanting her to have things differently than I did. Now, I'll tell you, just to put it into context, a little bit of my parenting story. Please. I was, and this is how my book begins, I was a 19-year-old first generation college student that found myself pregnant by someone that I knew I wouldn't have a relationship with. And so I was on a full scholarship, the first person to go to college in my family. And I felt like I had messed up my whole life.
Wow.
Finding myself pregnant. And so that's the first chapter. But the way the story ends, and I tell people the beginning and the end because the meat of it is in the middle. Mm-hmm. The way the story ends is I had the opportunity to see my 19-year-old walk across the stage.
Awesome.
It was a story that almost didn't happen. So she graduated college at the same age that I was contemplating. What am I going to do with my life? So it's a very good full circle encouraging moment to kind of see that journey take place. And so, in trying to parent in a way that I wasn't parenting, the first thing it started with was wanting to just give her something that I didn't have, wanted her life to be better than mine. I think the biggest thing that I had to do also is I never had a close relationship with my mother. I was raised by my grandmother, and I really wanted my daughter to have someone that she felt she can talk to about anything.
That's awesome.
And if you want openness in any relationship, man, it requires patience. It requires suspending judgment, because they're going to say something that you don't feel is right. But if you react to it, you may ruin the next thing they may ever want to say to you again. So it's a lot of different things and triggers. But it started with me wanting to give her something that I didn't have.
Wow, that's amazing. And what I can also read between the lines on is maybe it also started with you wanting to give yourself something that you didn't have, right? Like you want to give her something, but I think sometimes you gotta hit rock bottom to be reborn from the ashes. And that was probably a moment where you were like I felt that into my heart, like when you were telling me that story, and you were like, okay, why did I just feel like my life is over? That's not right. This is a blessing. So what, like, I'm like a radical responsibility person. So I always say, what patterns did I create in myself that made me feel this way? And then when you can recognize that, you can release them as, are those really me? Or are those patterns that I've subconsciously collected over the decades and that I can let go and create my own story moving forward? So you didn't highlight it, but you obviously went through that journey to be able to give her something better. And I just like my goosebumps. Like, I commend that. That is so cool. Like, and
one of the things I broke off was perfectionism, because I suffered from perfectionism. But when you're 19 and pregnant and not with the father, you can't really hide it. And so so you really have to overcome and get over the perfectionist's tendencies or what people think of you, and you got to put one foot in front of the other. And that's so awesome. That experience, and I said this to someone earlier, sometimes we break down before we step up.
Sure.
And so I broke down, but then I stepped up.
Exactly. I didn't stay down. That's the thing.
yeah. You know, I talk about with my daughter, one of the things that I wish I could have done a better job with her, and I didn't realize it until she was about 17, 18, was that she always saw me stepping up, but I had never shown her me breaking down. Okay. And so I started to see in her that lack of vulnerability, or feeling like she always had to be strong. But that's the only face that I gave her. She didn't know that I cried in a shower.
Yeah.
And so I got better about showing her vulnerability, and that's okay. And that, trust me, you've seen me step up, but I've broken down too.
Wow.
And how I've overcome.
It's so true. I mean, I shared with you a little bit of our story. So my daughter is now 16, who was adopted into my life when she was 4. Like, I see similar things in her, where she wants to be like the strong, and she is, right? Like, she has a business and she's out there, like, she makes more money than some of the housewives in our neighborhood. Like, she's out there crushing life and she's amazing. But like, you want to raise whole people, you know, like, I don't want her to be like in her 30s, like going through this, like, you know, come to Jesus moment of like, I want her to understand, like, all of you is perfect.
It's okay.
And I love what you're saying. It's like, we need to be okay being vulnerable and sharing what being whole looks like. We call it, I have to curse, because that's what we call it, sitting in our shit. And you know, it's like, it's real, but it's real. And like, sometimes it'll be directed at each other, or sometimes it'll be introspected, where I'm like, I need you to see me sitting in this right now, because I don't know what to do about it. And I'm frustrated, and it's not your fault, and it's not daddy's fault. It's just a thing I'm going through right now. And then it becomes like, how do we do this together? And you know, now I'm watching her, and I'm thinking of it in your vernacular. I'm watching her become a leader, and I'm watching her do it with our 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Because she got to see you do it, and me, like, your kids get to see you do these things. So I never thought of it that way until you just said that, but it makes sense. You know, I just thought I didn't have the capacity to like hide it, so I just showed her. But it's smart to let her see the breakdown.
And here's another thing I'll add to that, is one of my aha moments and things that I've learned over the years in managing people and in leading my children at home, is certain things are taught and other things are caught. You don't even have to teach it, and they catch on to it. And so again, when my daughter's about 17, 18, she started having, and it's in my book, you know, mental health, like, she's going through it. And then when we kind of removed all the noise and got down to what the root cause was, it was something that I taught her without even trying. Like, she caught it off of me. She felt that she had to do things a certain way. She says, man, you worked so hard, you pulled yourself out of this environment, you've given me a good life, and she felt the pressure to continue that, even though I never put it on her. I never taught her that. I never said it to her, but she was able to observe me and she caught that off of me. And then to not catch the balance of the vulnerability part. So then I had to be more intentional about, no, girl, do you know I was crying in the car on the way here? You know, I cried when I dropped y'all. I cry. I'm a crybaby. Like, you haven't caught on to that? Like,
that's awesome.
I'm like, I can't believe that you guys never noticed that, you know? And I'm like, there's balance. Like, I break down. Yeah, I just don't say that. Like, I just don't.
I love it.
It happens. So it's okay to feel not okay. And you get back up. You don't have to hide that.
Right.
So I do a better job of telling it to them now.
Yeah. And some of that might be inherent in you. Like, you're just not a kind of person who stays down. But I also think, like, nature versus nurture, right? Aristotle's great complex. I think that can be taught as well. Yeah. Now, the crux is you got to self-teach it before you can, your kids can catch it. Like, I love what you said. There's being taught and then there's being caught. I think of that in my vernacular. There's two ways to break. You can break in, like someone's applying pressure from the outside and they break you in. That's negative growth, right? Or you can break out, which is like you're saying, you can get up. And that's what your daughter's doing, is she's creating, all you did was create space. And now she's hitting the ceiling of that space and she needs to break through. And that's her way of doing it, is you have to go through the shit. You have to go through the hard stuff in order to proceed from there. That's such a cool lesson. I want to tie that into raising children to be leaders. Now, you do this in a professional capacity. You make the parallels to the family. What are some of those attributes? And then how do we intentionally wrap them into our being present with our children so we can help them to develop these characteristics for themselves?
All right. So some of the things that we may use at work, like you hear the individual development plans. We hear about setting SMART goals. We hear about, you know, how do you follow up? How do you reinforce behaviors? I use the same things at home. So I literally have a development plan for all of my children. There is something that I want them to achieve, either academically, socially. And then some of it, I call it like homework kind of thing. Not homework that's issued from the school, but homework and how I want them to be able to live and maintain their homes when they're older. And so I'm consistently teaching them those things. I think sometimes as parents, we just think of the day-to-day we're raising them. And for me, it's just like I have a individual development plan for one of the people that work for me at work. I have a plan for my children at home. So that's, again, something that you take from the workforce and you bring that home. SMART goals. And the way I articulate expectations to my children, I articulate them in a SMART format. I make sure I'm specific, that is measurable, that is time-bound. All those things. And so I am teaching them those languages. So as they're catching things, they're catching how to coach other people. And so my kids tend to be in leadership positions, or they tend to be, if they're running around in a neighborhood, they're at the front of the pack leading those kids because they're used to being coached. And so now they go out and coach others. And so if you take some of those frameworks and you bring it home, or you take some of that stuff from home and you bring it to work, I recognize effort. I reward achievement. That balances out the accountability and the morale. So maybe we haven't hit the goal yet, but I'm going to point out the fact that I see you grinding to get there.
I love that.
Same thing I would do with someone at work. So that's how I kind of intercede those things, but I use the same framework, same thought processes, and I just apply them in both settings.
So I want to compliment you, because I think it takes like a special person to look at a situation and say, like, these things actually overlap and I can make my life a lot easier and I can grow by like 1 + 1 = 5, right? Like by applying this, like enough effort into both that I can use in both areas. And like, so I think about if you're in a leadership role, it's easy to do this because you're already doing this at work. But what if you're listening to this podcast and you're doing shift work and right now, like, you're in it and you're grinding. Well, you still can leverage the opportunities as a parent to now do these things. It's like Dora said, her first leadership position was being a mom.
Yep.
And you can still gain an efficacy and a competency in these things. And then that can translate to work. Yep. So I just love that.
Yeah, I think I love the way you summarize that, because I firmly believe that if you aren't in a leadership position just yet and you want to get there and you're a parent, guess what? You're already in a leadership position. I say tweak your resume because you know how to you know how to manage a budget. You know about time management. You're responsible for a whole life out here. Like, how can you translate those things into the workforce? Trust me, I'm sure you can.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So I want to circle back to the IDP, the individual development plan for, for those of us who, for those of us who are not in the, box. And I want to, I do something similar with my kids, and we look at it from a psychology development standpoint of we are walking in tandem on this path of life, but their goals, which we have them pick, are all going to be different than my goals. Like my goals is, you know, obviously growing and scaling this podcast and making as much of an impact. And that's like my 5-year, like long-term goal. My daughter has a different one. My 4-year-old has a different one, and they're all developmentally age appropriate for who we are, but they're all something that we strive toward. So I want to, understanding like that's kind of how I've used this in my life. I want to learn more about the way you apply your IDP. So when you're talking to your kids and you're coming up with their homework or how they're going to develop their culture in their own home, is this something that you have like a format? Do they have a say in what the measurables are? Like, give me a little bit more. This is really cool.
Yeah. So definitely they help to lead the process. So it's a collaborative experience. Yes, I'm there guiding them. Because ultimately, I want to raise whole people. Like you said earlier, I want to raise whole individuals, but I also want to raise leaders. So I have my daughter, who's my oldest, but I also have 3 sons. And I think about what their future role is going to be in this world. They're going to be husbands. They're going to be fathers. They're going to have to lead other people. And they're not going to be good leaders if I spend their childhood diminishing their leadership skills or qualities or not allowing them to practice. So I asked them, what is it that you want to accomplish this school year? That's kind of usually how the conversation starts. What do you want to accomplish this school year? What do you want to be good at? I have one of them. He wants to have a starting position in football. Nice. My other one, he's a senior year. He wants to make the high school basketball team. He wanted to have a part-time job. And so he's doing his conditioning and he's working his part-time job. You know, he's graduating this year. We're thinking about what it looks like afterwards. But it really starts with, what is it that you really, really want? And then I kind of guide them. But I'm that parent that my kid, my teens have taken the StrengthFinders assessment to really understand what their strengths are. As someone in the workforce who's hired and worked with a lot of people, I find that that's one of the things that people struggle to articulate is what they're good at.
Yeah.
So one of my goals with my 11-year-old is to build his confidence and also help him to identify and articulate what he's really good at. Because too often they can articulate what they're bad at because people always tell them.
And with a lot of relevant evidence.
It's like, guess what? You don't have to focus on what you're weak at. There'll be enough people in the world that'll tell you that. You don't need that in your own voice. Exactly. I need you to be able to confidently articulate what you're really good at. And so we're working on that with him. So the goals vary. It's different per child. My oldest, who's 20, we have a different set of goals for her and what she wants to achieve. And then I see how I support. So if with her, some of my things are more like an accountability partner. Like, would you like me to remind you? How would you like me to bring up that conversation? Are you asking for my advice or are you just venting right now? So it looks different there. And so, yeah, each one is individually.
But it seems like you're taking a very coach role where you're letting them figure it out. And I think that there's an age and it's all it's a great debate on when that is, because it depends on your culture and your family and all the things. When you stop guiding and you start coaching as a parent, when you stop being the tactical guide and you just let them and you help push them along, I guess you are guiding, but it's more of like a mentor or coach versus like authoritative top down parenting. So I want to tie that back in to what you were saying before with leadership skills and accountability and following up. So I really love this. I'm gonna tweak how we kind of implement this and then kind of add on to it, because if they can come up with a goal for themselves, they can come up with a plan to get there and a pathway. They can come up with touch points, and then they can tell you as a parent how they want you involved. Like, they have taken full accountability for this. And now your goal as a parent or your role is to help guide them. And
it's so much easier.
Well, one, it's easier. And then you take Doris's tactic and then have the conversation on how they can apply that to high school sports, the I'm trying to think of the army before you go to the army, J-O-R-T-C, R-O-J.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what my role is in it, is once they tell me something that they like or a goal that they have, then I help them to scale that bigger and help them to understand the natural consequences, whether it's positive or negative, or, hey, have you thought about this portion of that? Or you also need to consider this portion of this, you know? And so it's more like a partnership, but what it does is it creates a closeness with them they'll come to me and talk to me about anything. Like, people always compliment me and my daughter's relationship. Like, how do you guys get so close? Cause I'm not close like that with my mom. I'm not close like that. I'm like, I think the biggest thing I've done over the years is, number one, I've been a great advocate for her. I've never been in a predicament where I lost my credibility, meaning she came to me and I didn't believe her, or I jumped on her and didn't have all the details. And so I have great credibility established with her. But also, awesome. I know how to suspend judgment. I know how to sit there and wait and say, do you want me to give you the answer, or are you just venting and you want to figure this out? I don't shelter them from mistakes. It's okay to make them. It's a part of growing. And so I'm not going to let them get hurt, but I don't mind letting them feel the natural consequences to their actions, because I feel like it's important. So if I tell you to study and you don't study and you fail the test, you're going to deal with the natural consequences. You make the choice. I'll let you make the choice. You deal with the consequences.
Love this. Ooh, we only have like a few minutes left and there's so much I want to dig into still. This is great. There's like a few times that you said something and I'm thinking to myself, like, this is hard. This is hard for, like, I can't even do this for myself. Like, I have a hard time suspending judgment on my own self. Like, you know,
so it's hard. It is hard. Like, I'm not going to pretend that it's easy to sit there sometime and listen, but I would tell you, I think that it has been helpful, because I think if I would have reacted to certain things that I heard early on, then I definitely wouldn't have known other things.
Give me some tactical advice, either in the workforce or for home, on how or like what to say. Like, you know how they have those books like Eat This, Not This when you're in college? Like, don't say this, say this, for like suspending judgment with your kids. So instead of just jumping right in, like, what's the liaison like phrase? Like, give me something.
First thing I would do is take a deep breath, because physically your body is reacting to whatever the surprise or shock or whatever's about to give your reaction. Deep breath, like, breathe in, breathe out, so you can release some of that tension, open your lungs back up and chill a little bit. And then I think sometimes people are afraid to pause conversations, and we didn't do this very well early on, but we've gotten much better about it. Cause I think sometimes we feel that urgency to resolve. And no, we just like, hey, give us a second to think about that. Like, you just laid a lot on me. Give me a few minutes and go get something to drink. Come back in here at 10:30 or whatever, and we'll finish talking. Just take a break. Like, if you feel like you're going to react, break the conversation. Hey, give me a second.
Love this.
And then that way you don't have to react a certain way. You got a moment to think about it. You can call up a best friend and like, girl, this child just said, you know, whatever the case is, you can kind of react, get it out. And then now you can come back to the conversation a little bit more composed. And I'm good at that a lot of the time, a lot. I don't get it right every time, because sometimes the 1-2 punch comes so quick. I'm like, what did you just do? Because I automatically understand the implications of what happened. Of maybe they didn't get it. But for the most part, what I do is, if I know my first reaction is probably not going to be positive and I really want them to think it through, I pause the conversation.
Okay, good.
Hey, thank you for letting me know. I'm going to need a second to think about what you just told me. Give me like 10 minutes and I'll come back to your room. Let me think about what you just said.
But you will go to your room.
Yeah. Like, go chill out in your room for a second. Let me really think about this, because at least I don't say anything that I can't take back. You can't.
Now you can do damage control. Exactly. And like you said, you kill yourself as a credible force if you're just because these kids are smart. They're like, I just see you as a dysregulated adult, and now I'm shutting off. And that age happens early. Like, I can see my 4-year-old glazing over sometimes, you know, like.
Well, sometimes we have unreasonable expectations of kids.
Oh, for sure.
We react and can't control our own emotions, but we expect them to have composure when the teacher says something they don't like. And then they say something back, and then we come back, and then we blow up when they say something to us. And it's like, you just literally did the same thing.
You know, 100%.
You don't have self-composure, and 100%. So they don't either.
Of course.
I teach my kids that you're either going to be a thermostat or a thermometer. And so that's the mantra that I give myself at work and at home. Are you a thermostat or a thermometer right now? Thermometers take temperature. So whatever you stick them at, they're going to be the temperature of that environment. But thermostats change temperatures.
Yep.
They adjust the environment. And so when I find myself in a moment, whether I'm at work or home and I'm about to react, I say thermostat or thermometer. And I'm always thriving to be a thermostat.
For sure. Right. And it's aspirational, and that's okay, right? Like, it's, you have enough wherewithal to, one, take a second, and two, have a goal in that moment so you can be better, right? Like, again, this is a day-to-day grind and a fight, but it's why it's so worthwhile, right? Like, in our house, we say, you can be a carrot, an egg, or a coffee bean, right? Like, the carrot, you put it in boiling hot water, it gets soft. It loses all form, right? So there's no composure anymore. You put an egg in boiling hot water and it becomes hard. Like, there's no way to learn and grow. You put a coffee bean into hot water and it changes the whole pot of water, right? Like, be the person who changes your environment. Have enough self-love to take that second and say, like basically what Doris says, I can take the skill sets here and I can take them here and I can make them commingle because it's our world, right? We just got to take the extra time. So there's two more things I want to talk to you about. And I know we're coming to the end of time, but this has been so wonderful. One of them is self-advocacy. I know a big thing that you focus on with your the companies that you consult for and your families is helping your children to properly self-advocate. That's a tough one in today's environment, especially like my age adult parent, you know, in their 30s or so. Like, we remember our parents, and I'm not specifically saying mine, but just in general, like my husband comes to mind, where you're not really allowed to voice your opinions, or it's felt disrespectful. And then now you have like the Gen Zs or whatever, where it's maybe a little too much. Like, we gotta find like a regulate in the middle. So walk me through like how you guide people with their children to self-regulate. I'm gonna self-advocate. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's part of the same strategy as we're on the listening end.
Okay.
It's kind of almost beginning with the end in mind, and really, how do we teach our kids to kind of align what they really want with their actions, or how do they articulate that? So it's something that I'm still working on, especially with my 11-year-old and my five-year-old, even teaching him like, hey, babies whine because they can't speak. Now you're five, you can speak. You no longer need to whine. You just say the words. Like, that's why they do that. And then he's like, oh, well, I'm not a baby anymore, so I don't need to do it that way. It's like, so how do we teach them how to just really articulate what they want? And I think that's where self-advocacy really begins. I think the other part is,
it's true,
and again, I talk about it in my book about advocacy, but in one of the instances, Justice was 4 years old and she came to me and told me that she didn't want to be somewhere because she felt like the person didn't love her the same way they loved her brother. And I said, did they hit you? Were they mean to you? No, mommy. Did they do anything? No. And I said, well, why do you think that? I don't know. I can just tell. She was 4 years old. And so she was displaying to me was intuition. So in that moment, I could have said, you're wrong. She loves you just like she loves him. I'm going to make you stay because I end up losing the vacation that I had planned because I took her. She asked to come and I took her. So what I did was, at 4 years old, I honored her intuition. And I think sometimes parents don't do that. We get dismissive. We say it doesn't make sense. We say, you know, it's irrational. We do all of those little things. And what we really don't realize we did was we planted a seed, a discourse.
Yeah.
With them. And so that's what I would say. How do you help your kids to honor their intuition? Sometimes they're right. Sometimes they're wrong. But how do you help them to honor it? Because it's good practice for self-advocacy. So at 4 years old, I said, you don't have to have any evidence. The person didn't do anything wrong, but something in you made you feel that way, and it's okay. So let's go. You get to go.
Yeah.
Just because you felt that way, you articulated it.
And in the short term, it might have looked like a negative, like, right, you sacrificed some alone time. But in the long term, what about the relationship you have? Of course.
In my book, it caused a whole discord with the family.
Of course.
Because I took her, and they thought that they had did something wrong. And even though I said, no, nobody did anything wrong, she just doesn't want to stay, the implications were, we must have did something wrong because why are you taking her? Sure. And to this day, I never believe they did anything wrong, but that's how they felt. So it was, it was a contentious moment for me to find my child. It was very contentious.
But it probably meant the world to her, and it like gave her a leg up on confidence to be able to stand up for herself and do it in a way that was respectful and not to feel like, because you remember this as a kid, you feel like you either have to fall on a sword or like you, you feel like something's wrong with you just because you're trying to keep people happy and you don't really understand why. Like, how does that create a whole person?
So, and then you grow up and you have these people who are people pleasers and you wonder why they're so people, like you raise them to be people pleasers. Like
exactly. Yeah, because you don't honor their intuition. And like obviously from a life experience standpoint, like we got it. Like the parents, we got that. But when it comes to intuitive instincts and just like that's why I love kids so much. Like give me a good kid and a dog all day. Like they're just so pure in heart and soul. And if I don't know about you, but I go into the parenting journey wanting to learn more than I impart. And you have to be open to it. Doesn't happen on its own because it's so easy to be dysregulated. But it's all, it takes is a little intentionality, and it's amazing what you can learn. I love it. That's awesome. Okay, so I have one last question, and I promise I'm going to wrap this up. So we didn't talk about this. You didn't talk, like this is not an area of focus, but it definitely is you. And I would be remiss to not kind of pull this out. You have this grounded energy about you, this confidence, this very vibrant like energy. And I want to know what types of practices and things that you do with your kids that help. I know, because I know you do it. I know we didn't talk about this. I'm throwing this out there, but I just feel it. I'm going off a vibe that you do with your kids to help them to learn that. I don't know if it's affirmations or if it's like, I think you said it really well earlier. We're starting with the end in mind and where they want to be, like long-term focused. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you take it wherever you want, but I just feel like there are things that you do that we should all probably learn from.
Well, here's one of the first things I would tell you, our role model. Again, I'm hyper aware that certain things are taught and other things are caught. And sometimes we catch on to more than what our parents say. I never want to be a parent that was do as I say, not as I do. So you see me do other stuff, but no, I'm telling you to do it this way.
Sure.
And so I have high accountability for myself to role model the things that I want my kids to do. So if they're going to catch something off of me, I'm making sure they're catching the right things. So I think it starts there, to be honest with you.
Love it.
And I'm humble. I'm very humble in terms of when I make a mistake, I try to be very transparent about sharing it. I don't think people share their mistakes or their valleys enough with their children. And again, age appropriate, but how do we share when we're down instead of just when we're up? And so, because that's where they learn. That's how they learn that life is going to have moments that are down and it's not the end of the world. And some of these people, again, they have social media. They're caught up in what the end game looks like. They're caught up what success at the end of it looks like because nobody does a reel of where they started.
Yeah.
Yeah, we graze over that part. And so I think there's some intentionality there with sharing. Right now I'm building this business. I left a six-figure salary. I left direct deposits every 2 weeks for the past 20 years to build a business that I believe in. Yeah, and so they see me in here building this business. They're stuffing envelopes with the books. They're seeing the grind that it takes they saw the things I could do versus the things that I have to say, we're not going to be able to do it this time. They're seeing the sacrifice. And I'm not sheltering them from that. So I think that's what we have to do is certain things are taught, but other things are caught. How do you live authentically and show them the processes that you want them to be able to execute later? How do you have open conversations? I grew up where stuff was grown folks' business. And there still are things that are grown folks' business. But I will tell you, I talk and expose my children to a lot more things because I want to get their wheels turning early.
There's so much here. I could talk to you for hours. I love this. This was so good. But it's true because if you allow them to play early on as an adult under your guardianship, like I would much rather them do that than do it in college when I don't know who knows what kind of company they're keeping, right?
My daughter's 13 years old when I got her own bank account. She started working at 16. We saw her how to balance it. She's now 20 years old and have never had an overdraft.
That's awesome. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, my 17-year-old had a few, but we finally at a place that they're not happening anymore. But again, he's learning with the protected environment and under guidance. So I'm hoping they will be better at budgeting as adults.
Well, of course, because they'll have experience.
They got experience already.
Versus we don't trust you, so we're going to wait until you're trustworthy. Like, what does that even mean?
It's a rite of passage for 13th birthdays. We all go and open a bank account. You get your ID card, the whole little experience, and then we start teaching them how to budget.
That's awesome. See, I love it. And the cool thing is there's no right answer, right? Like, my brother's in real estate. So for my daughter, she has investments. And when she comes 18, she wants to buy her first rental property, right? And she has a goal for it. And we're getting her to where she needs to be. So every family is different. Every goal is different, right? And the cool thing is, like, I always had certain things figured out as a kid, but other things I didn't. And I'm not waiting for me to figure it out in order to teach my daughter. I want her to learn alongside me so that she can start where I ended off and then she can get even better from there. So
I love that.
This is awesome. All right. So let's wrap this up because this is much longer than our normal podcast, but you're just so much value. I know you have a book. I can't wait to read it personally. Where can people find you? What are some of your offerings? Tell our audience where they can engage with you.
All right. So easiest way to find me is my name, DorisJacksonShazier.com. And I have a bunch of information over there. It'll also connect you to my business page, which is ShazierCoachingConsult.com. Awesome. And so what I offer, I'm a leadership coach, management consultant. So I run a full-on consulting firm where I partner with companies of all sizes to help with any of their people problems. You got a people problem, I probably have a solution for you, right? Cool. And I am a great partner to executives and people in senior leadership roles as they want a thought partner to kind of help them through some of the nuances of leadership. Again, I've led teams as small as 5, as large as 10,000. All right. And if you're looking for the book, Raising Justice, Lessons Learned Through Motherhood is available on Amazon. You want an autographed copy, it's available on my website at DorisJacksonShazier.com. Lastly, I am very vibrant on social media. So you can find me using my name on Facebook, definitely LinkedIn. I do a weekly blog every Monday called High Accountability, High Morale, and Business in Life, where I give leadership and parenting advice. I'm on Instagram and TikTok.
Man, you are my hero. I'm going to be like you when I grow up. I can't even get my measly post out.
This is what happens when I left corporate America. It's like, oh, I can do a bunch of things now.
Exactly. All this time. Wow. That's impressive. I brushed my teeth this morning. So there. Raise you. I'm just kidding.
Hey, all things count. All things count. Kidding.
I got a 4-month-old. So we're just going with what we can.
You're up. You look great. You're fully dressed.
Oh, that's awesome. You can only see from here up. Fair. I'm just kidding. I do have pants on.
Great milestones. Those are good milestones.
This was great. Doris, thank you. So enjoyed. I feel like I've known you for years. So thank you for coming and sharing your heart today. I love that you so seamlessly tie all of that in. And it's no wonder why you're so successful. And I'm excited for the people who take advantage of reaching out to you because I can tell they're going to learn a ton. Parents, we love y'all. So fun to share this time with you. Keep the comments coming. Keep letting me know when you interact with some of the speakers that you've met here. It really warms my heart and it's the best. I love it. It's my gratitude for doing this. I so appreciate it. And you guys know the deal. We'll see you next week. Until the next perfect time, everybody, stay beautiful and stay inspired. See you guys.
Thank you.